Führung, Selbstwirksamkeit und Unternehmenserfolg. Und das mit Fokus, Leichtigkeit und Energie. Geht nicht? Doch! Holt euch spannende Einblicke und interessante Denkanstöße in der Leadership Lounge. Von und mit Laura von der Gröben. Also Platz nehmen und zurücklehnen.
Imagine being able to read the thoughts and intention of those around you just by observing their movements. That would be amazing, right? Today we have a really, really special guest who's going to take us deep into the world of body language. And our guest is no other than Jane Horgrave, the leading body language expert. Jane has spent years decoding the secrets hidden in our everyday gestures and expressions. And she's the author of several must-read books. I have this one with me, and it's a really, you have to read it. I love it. And yes, she has been featured in the NBC News and the ABC News and the CBS News, in the New York Times and the Cosmopolitan magazine, and a thousand of other magazines and TV shows. Yes, I'm so glad to have you here, Jane. And yeah, get this, dear audience. She's even analyzed the body language of several US presidents. And I personally met Jane at a Tony Robbins event where she spoke from in front of 2,000 persons. And I was just hooked by her speech because she is doing it so perfectly to pair really interesting facts and to pair it with a really good storytelling. So I couldn't hesitate to ask you to come to my podcast, and yeah, I'm more than happy that you said yes. So dear audience, grab your notepads and let's dive into the fascinating world of body language with Jane Horgrave.
Oh, thank you, Laura. That is a great, sweet introduction. You know, when you said that my audience was 2,000 people, sometimes I forget, you know, how big an audience is. But the great thing is when you have an audience of that size and you can reach people, whether it's virtually or you can reach them, whether they're in the back of the room or not. I mean, that's a blessing to me as a teacher, you know, to try to teach you a skill that you can use immediately the next day. And you are correct. My field is body language. So I usually study how a person will move his hands or his arms or his eyes or his shoulders. And then I interpret that and I tell you what's going on inside of his mind. And I do work in the courtroom. So I do pick juries. So there's a very serious side to what I do. And I specialize in how to tell when someone's telling the truth versus how to tell when someone's telling a lie. So maybe for our listeners today, I can teach them how to spot when someone's not being honest with them. Or better yet, I can teach them how to lie to someone and they won't even know that they're being lied to. So it's really a fun science. I've had a great time studying it and using it on other people too.
Absolutely. I'm so happy that you're here with us. I start the podcast always with a random question, and I have like a little app on my mobile phone, which is giving me the question, the random one. Okay. So wait for the first question. Oh, that's good. That's a good one. What's so interesting or soothing or sexy about the things you gravitate towards?
Repeat that one more time.
What's so interesting or soothing or sexy about the things you gravitate towards? For example, the body language.
Right. I think for the basis of really living this life is something to do with psychology and understanding ourselves and understanding other people who come in contact with us. So if you understand, I think that's what's so attractive about body language is that if you really are into it, you're consciously aware of what kind of message you're sending out. Whether I'm walking into a restaurant, where I'm walking into a meeting, I'm thinking, well, are my shoulders the right way? My hands are the right way? So I'm always aware of it, Laura. And people will say to me, Jan, do you ever let it go? I probably never let it go. Although when I'm in conversation with someone, I say, oh, don't worry, I'm probably not reading your body language, but I always am reading their body language. So the thing that's most attractive is that I can think about how I'm projecting myself when people see me. But then two, what's attractive to me is when I'm watching someone speaking with me, you know, I'm looking at how they move their hands. I'm looking to see how they use their eyes, what do they do with their shoulders, because I want to know if I'm being lied to. I want to know if that person is confident. So I guess that's what it is. It's the attractiveness of being able to read someone. And then also having to be able to read myself. And Laura, I do laugh about it because people say to me, they say, Jan, I would not want to be married to you. And I tell them, I would not want to be married to me either, because I read my husband every day. Poor thing. Sometimes, you know, if he just raises a finger, I'm thinking, oh, I know what he's going to tell me next. So it's such a good science to know. I've had a good time learning it, Laura.
Amazing. I can totally relate to it as a psychologist, how interesting it is to just to move or to know more about the psyche of people and about their body language. So yes, I can relate to that. But Jane, take us with you. How did it all start? How did you came on this top? How did you wanted to become an expert?
Yeah, never thinking when I first started that I was going to be a body language expert. I was in a graduate psychology class at the university that I went to. I live in Houston, Texas, but I was born in Lafayette, Louisiana. So I was sitting in a college class and I had a really great psychology professor. And every day he would walk in and he would look at one of us and point and he would say, I know what you are thinking. The next day he would come in and look at someone else and say, I know what you are thinking. And then one day he looked at me and he said, Jan, I know what you are thinking. And I thought, well, that is silly. How can he figure out what I'm thinking? So he started telling us about body language, how you move your hands or your arms or your eyes or cross your arms. He was starting to explain that to me. And I became fascinated with the subject. And I had a boyfriend at the time, Laura. So I said to my college professor, I said, so when this boyfriend of mine tells me that he loves me, I can figure out if he's telling the truth. And I said, oh, yeah, you would be able to. So I thought, what a fascinating thing. I could tell if my boyfriend was being truthful or not. So I started studying the subject. And I my first term paper that I ever did or research was for this professor. And he gave me a good grade. And look, don't give Jan Hargrave a good grade without me thinking I want to study. So it kind of lit a fire under me. And then from that moment on, all of my college research was in the field of body language. So I majored in business and I minored in psychology. So what would happen is that I was doing these reports on body language between teacher and student, body language between teacher and parent, body language between principal and teacher. So it was all involved in a school setting, as I was in a school setting when I first graduated with my bachelor's degree. So then from there, it just continued and continued. And then my college, after I got my master's degree, asked me if I would teach classes for attorneys, our local attorneys, if I would teach them some body language to help them pick more favorable juries. So that's how it started. I would bring these attorneys in. I would teach them how to spot liars or how to spot truth tellers or confidence, nervousness. And I would teach them all that during the semester. And then from there, you know, I started speaking maybe a Rotary Club, or I don't know if you have them in your part of the world, but a Kiwanis Club, a Chamber of Commerce would say, oh, Jan, come do this speech. And I could not believe that people were paying me to do a speech on body language because I just loved it so much. So for many years, Laura, I would teach in the day and speak at night, teach in the day, speak on the weekends, teach in the day, speak on the weekends. And then after a few years of doing that, businesses realized that we need to bring body language into the business world because all the communication that we do in business world is the same thing of all the communication we do in the courtroom. So honesty in the courtroom is still honesty in a negotiation. Dishonesty in the courtroom is still dishonesty in a business setting. So then after a few years of working in the courtroom, but I still do my work in the courtroom, I mainly started training executives, people who had to interview others. No matter what someone does for a living, everyone needs to be concerned in understanding something about body language, because even in the percentages, and these are what the exact percentages are, 55% of a person's communication is nonverbal, 55%. So that's why when you first see someone, you say, do I trust them or do I like them? 38% of a person's communication is simply voice inflection. Like when you and I are talking, when our voices go up or down, you know, it gets people more interested than someone who just has a monotone voice the whole time they're speaking. And then the research says that only 7% of a person's actual face-to-face communication does come from the words that they say. So that's where you get the old saying, actions speak louder than words. We say many things with our bodies that we don't want other people to know we're thinking inside. So that's kind of how I got started, Laura. I was in that psychology class, but thank goodness that it did, because after, you know, I enjoy it. I love teaching people to help them exist better in life. I love teaching them this in case they have to do job interviews, they have to do interrogations. And I think, and what happened is that body language was not really big, you know, until we had here in the United States, we had the O.J. Simpson case. And when we had the O.J. Simpson case, they had used a body language expert to help pick that jury. So that's when we first started hearing the word, you know, jury consultant. And then after that, it became really popular to be, you know, someone who understood body language. But I had studied it even before the O.J. case. And now I even watch football players and they'll say, oh, look at their body language going back into the huddle. So I'm so excited when everybody's interested in body language.
Absolutely. A field of body language, which I'm really interested in, because I work a lot with law firms and also with C-level executives. And they sometimes, especially women, are even if they are super successful, they have issues like people pleasing or feeling the imposter syndrome and feeling insecure because they have so much pressure from the outside. So what me and my audience are really curious about is how can you like look more secure even if you feel insecure in the inside?
Right. Okay, and that's a great question, because you see, Laura, In body language, we have this saying that says the size of physical space you need around you dictates to another how powerful they should assume you are. So I'll just mention that again. The size of physical space, you know, how much space do I need when I'm sitting near you? Do I need a little bit of space? Do I need a big space? So for men, it's very easy because men take up a lot of space. And a man can sit with his arms on the chairs on the side of him for hours, and no one thinks ill of it, but they do get the impression, wow, he looks very powerful, only because he's taking up more space than some other people are. So if you saw three limousines coming down the freeway and one limousine was much larger than the other two limousines, where would you think the most important person would be? In the largest of the three? Yeah. Or who gets the biggest spaces in offices? Probably the highest ranking officers. So by nature, when a man communicates, a man's gestures tend to go away from his body. So when a man is speaking, Laura, his gestures kind of go away. We as women, our gestures tend to come towards us just by nature that when we were speaking. So when I coach a woman and I say, you know, to be of equal status or to make yourself appear of equal status, sometimes you have to take up a little bit more space when you are presenting. You can make a bigger gesture with your hands or when you're sitting. And I tell this to ladies, we cannot sit with our arms crossed and our legs crossed when we enter a meeting, because then we look very non-confrontational. We stay in a little bubble. And when we stay very small, that's when people see us at our weakest. And that's when they say, oh, I can pounce upon this person and get my way with them. So I tell people, even if you spread your books out a little bit further around you on your desk, giving the aura that you need a lot of space, or sometimes, and I'm just going to kind of do it, you know, right now, Laura, I'm just putting my arm almost on the back of one, you know, on the side of me on my chair. I mean, anything to make yourself look more open, also putting your shoulders back. And I tell women, if you're going to have to lead a meeting, you cannot lead a meeting with and expect, you know, really to assume that you look powerful with slumped shoulders. You're going to have your shoulders back. You can even add extra padding in your jackets. It's one of my secrets that I do to make sure that they know, because men pad their jackets because they know it gives them that authority look. You know, military has padded jackets too at the shoulders. So we as women can, you know, have that little secret too, go into the room. And you know, we are very, very smart. Women are really as smart as anybody else. So sometimes we just don't show that because we feel that we're not looking strong enough, but you can look strong enough and you can do it with your body language. I mean, sitting up straight, putting your shoulders back, making sure that your shoulders are even, because especially in a virtual call, your shoulders are so visible to others. because unevenness of shoulders, if I'm sitting with one shoulder raised more than the other, this means indecisiveness of person. So I would need to be with my shoulders really square and letting you know that I'm here to do some kind of business with you. So I guess my secret is that you kind of expand some of your gestures. You make sure that your shoulders are back. And a way to make sure that your shoulders are back is just kind of picture your two shoulder blades trying to touch it. They'll never touch each other, but, you know, just kind of picture, oh, they're trying to meet each other, just like that for a few minutes. And then you can put your shoulders down, but every now and then maybe do that same motion, not really quickly do it, do it softly so that they don't notice that you're doing it. And then, you know, because women are soft by nature, a tilt in your head shows that you're interested. A nod in your head is also a good gesture to do because it's a gesture that means acknowledgement or encouragement to someone else who is speaking. So for years, Laura, it was thought that women were better listeners than men, but women are not better listeners than men. It's simply that women give more nonverbals when they are speaking and listening. You know, when a woman's listening, a woman normally nods her head. A man more so stays in a neutral position and doesn't have any motion. So sometimes a woman may have an interview with a guy and later on in the afternoon, someone may say to the woman, how did the interview go? And she'll say, I don't know. I never got any nonverbals from it. So when I am training men, I say, come on, guys, every now and then you can nod, just a little bit nod. And then I tell women we can't nod all the time because they'll think that we agree with everything that they're saying. But a simple nod, especially in a virtual call, just is a sign of encouragement to whoever is speaking to you or a sign of acknowledgement that says, I'm listening, keep talking, I'm listening, keep talking, instead of just sitting there with a just blockhead. And also another thing that some people can watch for to see if whoever they're speaking with is listening to them and enjoying the conversation is a slight tilt in the head. You see what I'm doing? I'm just kind of tilting my head to one side. We usually tilt our heads when we are enjoying a conversation. And the background for that is, think of it like this. The neck is a very vulnerable area, and we could get hurt if someone hit us here. So we would never relax our neck if we were not comfortable with whoever was speaking with us. So if you're watching an audience, you're listening to them, and they're just listening to you. I mean, you're watching them, and they're listening to you. Just kind of watch for a few tilts. So when they're tilted, they're really interested, you know, in what you're saying. When we're talking, our head is normally straight up and down. When we're listening, if we're enjoying it, we probably have a slight tilt to one side. So I think those things would maybe help for a woman. And then too, you know, when we cross our arms, this serious cross, see, I'm crossing my arms and I'm not showing any fingers. When someone's arms are crossed this tightly, it usually means that this is a barrier. And it gives an indication that says, I have this shield in front of me and I do not want to listen to what you're saying. The only arm cross that we allow and teach in college negotiation classes is like this. You see, I'm crossing my arms, but I'm showing my fingers. So even both hands showing is okay. And even one hand showing, see this, Laura, with one hand showing, this is called a resting position or a coach's position. Because I never want to tell you not to cross your arms. It is okay to cross your arms. But if you're crossing, you make sure that at least one of your hands are showing. Because if one of your hands are showing, it is a body language gesture of contemplation. But then I also coach people and say, I would not suggest that you cross your arm when you are presenting. Do not cross your arms. It doesn't make you look as powerful as you could because when I cross my arms, see how my shoulders kind of droop? And anytime your shoulders are going to droop, you're going to look defeated and weak or fatigued. So if you cannot, you know, if you're not crossing your arms and your shoulders are more back and you look more powerful, I think, when you're speaking with people. So I suggest, because you know, sometimes people get into the rooms and they cross their arms and they cross their legs. And that's what we talk about, a non-confrontational seating position where you look very weak and other people feel that they can get their way with you. So those are two big things that I would probably suggest to women.
And just to look at from the other side, what would be on the other side, like little postures or gestures who show that we are not confident, who make us look.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the gestures of when people are nervous or we call them displacement gestures, discomfort mm-hmm. gestures. These are gestures that people do when they're very nervous about what they're saying. And these are gestures, I'll tell you how you can really remember what they are. They're gestures that do not help to get your message across. They're just gestures, you know, that like someone who's always fixing their clothing, that's a displacement gesture.
Yeah.
Someone who's always fixing their hair, that would be a displacement gesture. Someone who pulls pieces of lint constantly off their clothing, that's a displacement gesture. Someone, and I see people sometimes will scratch their neck about 5 times, that's a displacement gesture. This, you know, when I'm rubbing my hands and my fingers together, all of these are all displacement gestures. Sometimes I will see people even, they will talk with you, and I'm taking my right hand and just scratching the top of my left hand. Sometimes people talk and they do this. This is nothing. It just is meaning to them that they're nervous, because why would someone do this while they're talking with, you know, the hand does not itch. They're probably just doing it. And then sometimes I've seen people will scratch, you know, just kind of rub on the top, on the forearm of their arm here, just doing this while they're talking. And all of these are what they're done for. They're trying to distract you from the voice and more making you look, well, what's this person doing? Is that as interesting as what they're saying? So you don't want to have those. You want to have gestures that are very meaningful. And like when you're watching someone's hands, Laura, this is a shortcut to watching people's body language and understanding it. Think of hands and fingers like windows on a home. So when the weather is nice and sunny, probably the windows are open wide. When someone is comfortable and confident and they're speaking, there is spacing between their fingers when they're talking. That's an easy thing to remember. When the weather is gloomy and cloudy, probably the windows in the home are closed tightly. So when someone is angry and nervous and upset, probably the hands will be closed very tightly. So those are only, you know, those are really quick that you can just look at someone's hands and see how comfortable they are with what they're saying. And so for the people who are listening or watching, think about that. If you're in front of an audience to speak, you don't want to have your hands in a ball. That's an anger thing. It's as though you want to punch someone else. You want to have them very calmly, maybe kind of cupping a little bit even, and have spacing between the fingers.
Wow. That's so interesting, because you're like talking and saying like 2 sentences and there's so much gold inside of it.
I find it so that's good.
I think I need to listen to this podcast more than once just to take notes and to get all of the solid gold out of it.
Right. And, you know, I like to, you know, I still teach one class at the University of Houston, and the class is Graduate Accounting Communication. It's nothing about accounting. I know and nothing about accounting, Laura, but I teach CPAs and internal auditors how to ask the right questions to see if someone's embezzling or taking money unfairly from a company. So when I teach the class there, you know, it's like not even anything to do with the courtroom. It's not anything to do with negotiation, but it's also helping them to understand how to ask a question to really get information from a person. Because when they're questioning them about accounting or books and money, they want to know if that person's telling them the truth. So then I go into, you know, watching their hands, and then maybe I can share with our listeners and watchers some gestures of honesty and maybe some gestures of dishonesty.
Yes, please.
Okay. So you remember I used the word displacement earlier, or discomfort. These are gestures that people do just because they're nervous. And it's okay that we get nervous and stressed. We all do. And when we do get nervous or stressed, we always feel that we have to touch something that is familiar to us, whether it's our skin, our clothing, our hair. And when we touch things that are comfortable to us, things that we know well, it kind of soothes us down. But when you're in front of a group, you cannot do this constantly, 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 constantly. So what we have found in watching people to see if they're being honest or not, we start looking for certain hand motions, because people typically move their hands a few certain ways when they lie, and they move their hands a few certain ways when they tell the truth. Now, the hand motions that we look for in dishonesty are typically done by left-handed motions. And I'll give you some background about that. That when people are being insecure with or making up a part of a story, typically they will use their left hand while gesturing. And that is only because of the way that the brain is made. So for each one of us on the face of this earth, we have a right brain and we have a left brain. And typically our left brain, and we have fibers that join the two together, but our left brain is math and science, and everything you ever memorize is probably more so on the left. Our right brain is fun and it's creative and it likes music. So our right brain is where you make up a story. So if I'm telling you something and I'm making it up, it's coming from my right brain. And the thing that people have to understand is that the brain, whatever side the brain is on, it controls movement on the opposite side of the body. So my brain, my right brain controls every movement of my left hand, left finger, left eye, left leg. My right brain, the math, the science, the history, controls every movement on the right side of my brain. So for example, on my body, if I'm trying to multiply something in my head and I have trouble getting the numbers multiplied, I would probably start moving my right hand a little bit because my right hand, my left brain controls my right hand to get mm-hmm. those numbers multiplied and then finally come up with the right answer. So the great thing about using your hands when you're speaking, your hands kind of massage your brain to get words out. Because if I'm talking with you and I'm not using my hands at all and I'm really very stiff, it almost blocks your brain into finding words. So when I move my right hand, I'm getting brain things or words that are coming from my left side of my head. When I move my left hand, I'm getting word that comes from the right side of my head. Now that's complicated enough. I hope our listeners are not too complicated then, but just the only thing you have to remember about everything I just said, the right brain controls the left side movement. The left brain controls the right side movement. So if I'm telling you a lie, more so it's coming from the right side of my brain. So because of that, I'm going to gesture with my left hand. Never that left-handed people lie more than right-handed people. It is just that when someone's making up a story, it's coming from this side of my brain, this right side, and the movement's going to be with my left hand. So sometimes when people are lying, I've noticed that they do this. They'll take their left index finger, and while they make up their story and tell you their story, they begin to rub up and down the left side of their nose. So it's the left hand, the left side of the nose. And normally what they will do, they'll go up twice. You know, they'll kind of rub the nose on the side this way, and then they'll go underneath the nose and again rub twice. So let me show you in slow motion. I'll get close. They go up twice, and then they go underneath the nose twice. Because I'm sure that some people who are listening and watching have seen someone say to them, hey, you look really good in that dress. And they've been just lying to you each time. But the background behind that, like, why would someone think to do this? This comes back from everything that we do as an adult is emotion we used to do as a child. If you said something you should not have said when you were a kid, you would take both your hands and you tried to stuff it back in. Now we're adults. We don't do that in front of people. So we want to do it in a more sophisticated way. We take a hand and we kind of bring it to the mouth, hoping to stuff what we just said back in because we know that it's not a true story. And the reason also that someone feels the need to touch the nose with the left hand when they're lying is that when you tell something that makes you nervous or that's a fib, you get your blood kind of rushes to your nose tips. And because of that, you get a tingling sensation in your nose. I know that our listeners and watchers will never touch their nose with their left hand. It's kind of a fun little gesture. And also where this comes from is the Pinocchio effect. And I know you've seen people with, or you've seen a magazine when someone's caught lying and they'll have an extended nose on them. So that's where the motion of rubbing of the nose and bringing the hand out comes from. It's kind of funny, but at least people, when I explain the background of it, they understand what I'm talking about when I say the extended nosing. So nose rubbing. So that's why they rub the nose this way. Another gesture, there's three predominant ones. One's touching the nose with the left hand. The second one is touching the left eye corner with the left hand. And the third one is rubbing on the left ear with the left hand. And when someone touches the left...
Is it always what? Left hand?
Is it always what? Say it again.
The left hand, if it's like...
Because the left hand is controlled by the right creative brain.
Okay. So I'm just asking because my nose now starts itching.
I know, that's what people say. But the key thing is this, try never to touch your face when you're in a conversation with someone. Because the more you touch the face, the more nervous, you would look, whether it's right hand or left hand. But predominantly, try not to use the left hand. So when someone is touching the eye with their, let's say they've taken their left index finger, they're rubbing the corner of the eye. This is a message, I am not being very truthful with you. When they rub the ear with the left hand and they're telling you their story, this says, do not hear very clearly what I'm saying because I'm not being fully truthful with you. And the key thing with this that our listeners must get into their head is that, let's say you're not talking and you're listening to someone else speak. And while the other person is speaking, you start rubbing the left side of your nose, or you start rubbing your left eye with your left hand, or you start rubbing your left ear. if you are doing this while you're not talking and someone else is talking, it means that you feel you are being lied to. So let's say you would be talking and I'm rubbing the left side of my nose. It's as though I'm thinking, wow, this stuff stinks. I don't believe a word of it. So that's why it's good that our people learning this today understand they need to keep track of their body language while they are listening and watching someone else speak. Because I, you know, if I'm watching someone interview me and I see them rub their ear, I'm thinking, well, they probably did not believe what I just told them. So that's why it's kind of good to know that not only are these gestures of deception, these are gestures that you do when you feel you are being deceived. So honesty is primarily done with this left hand. Dishonesty, I'm sorry, is a left hand. And honesty gestures are done with the right hand, whether someone's right-handed or left-handed. And the right-handed gesture is when we bring our hand to our chest with our fingers spread out. Because, you know, I'm sure you've seen someone say, oh, I had a great time, and you believe them. It's because this is a very honest gesture, yeah. Bringing the right hand here. Usually the fingers are kind of spread out, Laura, because when the fingers are together, it's more as though you're doing a pledge to a flag. So when the fingers are spread out, you know, it's better here. And another part about when someone's telling the truth. Now, it's pretty hard to do when someone's sitting down. But let's say someone is standing up. Across my body, there are different zones of communication. So let me just explain what. If I'm talking, my hands are above my head. That's called the ecstasy plane. People are really crazy when they're doing this. So excited. When I'm speaking and my hands are about at my mouth level, this is called the thought, you know, or the expressing ideas plane. At my chest here, this is the passion plane. So when someone's excited, they will gesture right here at the chest level of your shoulder. When someone's telling the truth, they gesture right here at the waist. So the waist is the T-R-U-T-H truth zone. Underneath my waist is called the grotesque zone. So you probably don't want to gesture too much below the waist. So if I'm telling you something that's true, or I think of you're watching your newscast in the afternoon, your local news station. So someone's giving you a very serious story. They will probably gesture at their waist when they're telling the serious story. The weatherman will gesture right here in the passion zone because he's telling you the very same thing he told you yesterday. We have no rain coming. So he's trying to keep you excited. And the interesting thing about knowing these zones of communication, let's say that you are speaking to a group and you are nervous when you first start talking, put your hands in your truth plane. It's going to comfort you. If your hands are here, you're getting excited. The audience is getting excited and you can't catch your breath. So put them in the truth And you can use this in a variety of ways. Let's say I'm giving you a product or talking about a product. I'd probably put it in the passion plane because I want you to get excited about it because I'm excited about it. But if I'm telling you something that's true, I'll probably talk right here in the truth plane. And so that's why even on a virtual call, it's pretty tough to do to show the waistline. So I tell people, if you're talking with someone, show me more than your face. I want to see something of your body to see how comfortable you are, you know, and two, one thing that we teach people is that others trust you easier when they can see non-threatening hand motions from you. So even on a virtual call, if I'm talking with you, sometimes I'll put my hand maybe in a cupping situation, then I need to take them out. You don't want to keep them in the viewing the whole time, but so that they can see that you are a real person. Every now and then you can bring a hand to your chest in the honesty gesture. You can bring your hands facing upward, and upward facing palms are accepting, downward facing palms are controlling, and then take them out of the screen. You never want to make crazy hands. You never want to bring your hands way up here. You probably want to keep them, you know, maybe at chest level, because that's about that's the only area that's going to show when you're doing a virtual call unless you're standing up. But you have to bring your hands into view every now and then so that they can see you as a human being. Just a head does not let me see you as a human being.
That's interesting. So to sum it up, how can, for example, leaders or a CEO use their body language to foster more inclusive and a more engaged culture, psychology environment? Yeah. Because I've said that we can do something with our hand gestures or with our body language.
Yeah. You know, when you said that, the first thing that came to my mind was that, especially when you said the word inclusiveness, was that in every conversation that you have to make the person understand that you're present at that moment. And instead, you, so to make them feel present and valued, you have to make sure that you are facing them. Your shoulders are squared with them, because oftentimes we have conversations with people kind of on the side. That is not giving them enough credit as a person and not giving them enough worth. You have to actually be present in the conversation, looking at them eye to eye and squaring your shoulders to that person. So when I teach handshakes, even I tell people, you know, if you're shaking someone's hand, your shoulders are square, you're going this way, vertically is the best kind of handshake, not with your hand facing downward, not with your hand facing upward. It has to be vertical so that either party feels they have a 50-50 chance in the conversation. And then I warn them, you square your shoulders to them, because if I'm shaking your hand and I'm pointing to someone else, that would be quite discourteous to you. So I would say, make sure that you're facing them. Make sure that you listen to people well. And, you know, when you also said that, I wanted to give you one sign of confidence, because we've talked about signs of nervousness and signs of deception. One big sign of confidence that all of our people listening, whether they're male or female, can do, and it's called the steeple. And when I'm showing the steeple, I'm putting my fingertips together at about chest level. It almost looks like you're praying, but the bottom of your hands never touch, just the top. And Laura, look, it's never this. This is like a spider. You never want to do that gesture. You're calmly doing like a church steeple. See what I'm doing it here? You can kind of see it here. It's like this. So people do it here at chest level, you know, and it's a huge sign of confidence. People do it here. Look at my hands here. This is called a goalpost steeple. So anytime you're going to see this kind of formation, whether it's with the fingers together or the fingers kind of apart, it is always, always considered a gesture of confidence. But it doesn't have to be even done with all the fingertips. Look, I can do this. I can just put my pointer fingers together. You see the right pointer fingers here? And I can just have them here when I'm speaking, or look at this. I can put my thumbs together and listen. But anytime you see a steeple, it is highly, highly correlated with someone who feels confident with what they're saying. So that's an easy gesture. You're sitting there in a meeting, and instead of doing this, this is a nervousness gesture. Calm yourself down and just do a steeple, you know, and your hands can go apart, then come back together, and then bring it down. You never want to do this the whole time you're speaking, because it's too, they'll start saying, what is this person doing? But it is a gesture of confidence. No gesture do you want to do too much.
Yeah, I'm just laughing, know, because we have, like, our former president, Angela Merkel, she always did.
She did it
for a long time.
So. And you know, this is how it works. When someone is confident with what they're saying, the steeple gesture is at chest level. When someone is confident with what they are hearing, the steeple gesture is in lap, you know, in lap level. Yeah. So if I'm listening to you speak and my steeple's down here, that means I feel pretty good about what you're saying. If my steeple is up here, I feel good about what I'm thinking. So, but yes, she did do it. She did it really well. But it's better than... you know, doing this, you know, even though if you're nervous, it's okay to hold one hand with another. See what I'm doing here? And just leave them there in your lap. You know, you just don't want to do too much rubbing or turning or twisting. That is too much of a displacement gesture, but it's perfectly okay to hold your own hand. Because when we were children, Laura, and our teacher scolded us, we went out at recess and we held a friend's hand and it made us feel better. Now we're big people. We cannot just go hold a friend's hand. So it's so nice. We can just hold our very own hand when you're nervous. And it's perfectly okay. It kind of says, okay, girl, get with it. You can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I did, like, when I'm nervous, I know that I'm doing this, but like,
that's okay. You see, anytime you bring your hands together, it's like bringing thoughts together, Laura. Yeah. This is a
weird thing. It calms me down. And at least I think, and you are just saying that too, because you said it's okay. I think it makes me calmer, and it also makes me appear calmer.
Yeah. Anytime. Yeah. Instead of moving your hands or fidgeting will always make you look nervous. So when you notice that you're fidgeting, just stop your hands. Even if you cross them this way, even if you put your thumbs up, you see this is a steeple and a crossing. Mm-hmm. It's much better than someone. You see this, you know how people do this when they stand up? It's called the fig leaf. You've seen this, and they put it down at the bottom underneath their waist. That's an insecurity gesture. But if you're sitting down and you're doing this, this is perfectly, perfectly okay, especially if they're loose. If they're tight, you're nervous. If they're loose, you're just comfortable, and you're comforting your own self.
And are there other gestures we can use to make us calmer and to look more secure in if we are realizing for ourselves, oh, I'm super nervous at the moment? What
Yeah.
are some gestures we can just do to work?
I would say you go behind the curtains and put your hands in a steeple gesture. And you know what? It will calm you down. And if other people see you, you will look very confident to them. And sometimes when I'm on stage and I'm nervous, Laura, one secret that I do, I just take two fingers, see these two fingers, and I lay them on the side of me and I touch them together, whatever fingers you want to touch, you know, one or two, but just one finger touching another is as though you're holding someone else's hand for support. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but it just calms you down. But still, or put your own hand together. And it's better to have your hands in front of you than behind you, because behind you, they can't see. Even though it is a military stance, if your hands stay behind you too long, they won't trust you. But I mean, you can stand that way for a minute, but then bring your hands in the front and let them see your hands, because people trust you faster when they start seeing some kind of non-threatening hand motions from you. And non-threatening are usually soft. And the smoother someone's hands are, the more they appear confident than someone who's choppy with their, you know, some people would chop their motions down. This is usually meaning that they want to divide thoughts. When the hands are in a chopping motion like this, going straight up and down.
And are there some other hand gestures or things we can use? For example, if I'm a new team leader and I want to gain trust in my new team, which I can do?
Yeah, I would say that you use your hands to express yourself, because hands magnify your message. Someone is very boring to listen to if their hands never move. So I do cupping sometimes, and this is compare and contrast. Like if we do this, we'll get this. If we do this, we'll get this. So, you know, kind of, you see what I'm doing here? Bringing your hands together here, the steeple. And then let me show you this. Even a steeple here at the waist. See what I'm doing here? Steeping at your waist is also a big sign of confidence. And you see what I'm doing here? It's almost as though I'm holding onto an imaginary basketball and I'm talking. This is a wonderful gesture when you're trying to get someone on the same team as you. It's as though you're saying, I have this information in the ball of my hands and I will gladly pass it on to you. So it's almost as though I have this information here and I'm going to pass it on to you. You take it and you digest it, and hopefully you're going to give it back to me. And, you know, you can kind of go back and forth this way. So when you're trying to get someone on the same team as you, your hands are cupped. When your hands are in a box, see, I'm doing a little box right here. This is forceful. This is usually done when you want to get someone's attention. See, my hands are like this. So if you're talking, you want to get someone's attention, using your hands, your fingers are spread out and they're in a box. When you want to get them to think like you think, they're this way and they're almost in a ball. So knowing those right there, I think will help our people. I had a couple of others that I wanted to tell you, but maybe we can follow up with a handout that can give people information. I do this. It's called a sand pinch, like I'm pinching sand when I'm speaking. So then I had to research. I said, what does this mean? It usually means I have a point that I want to say. You know, this way, people sometimes will do this, hold a purse. It means they have a lot of information together. You see, and what you're doing right now, that's a good gesture. You see your fingers up and you're doing this. This is called critically evaluating. This is a good gesture, Laura. It's called critically evaluating.
Okay.
Women evaluate like this. You know, they put a finger up and slightly, you know, tilt the head. Men evaluate by doing this. They usually rub the chin, which is a great, great gesture. When you're seeing someone do this, whether it's a man or woman, at least it means they're thinking about what you're talking about. They're analyzing. So anytime someone touches up the chin, whether they're pulling, see, I'm kind of pulling here, rubbing underneath here. Touching of the chin is always correlated to evaluation. So it's not a bad gesture. If someone does this, it'd be okay. And in fact, when I teach classes on how to be effective during a virtual call, this is the only time I allow people to touch their face. Other than that, I say never, ever, ever touch your face unless you're evaluating what's being said. So you would someone do this, but I would never do it while I'm speaking. I would only do it when I'm listening to the other party. You see, it's easy and it's not bad, or this one is a really good one too. Look, this is boredom. You never want to do boredom. You just want to kind of hold on to the head and do evaluation.
But
so
I love
those good points. Yes, was that?
I love what you said, because I think that's a typical topic. How can I, for example, if I want to make a point and the other one is interrupting me, so I can do this.
Or this. Pointing your finger up usually says you want to talk right now. Well, like this. You see your fingers up. Or yeah. even this. You see, like grabbing the sand. It's called a sand pinch.
And yeah. If I want to continue, for example, someone is like
interrupting you,
and then, but I want to continue and not being like, but I didn't finish my sentence.
Do it again. Do it again. Yeah. Put your hands like this, anything that you can give to make yourself look more proud and more courageous and more confident. Yeah. But this is a good one. I was noticing I would do that on stage. And then too, you know, here in America, we see people do this, you know, they kind of like an accordion. See this?
Mm-hmm.
When people do this, that means there's a deeper meaning to what they're telling you right now. When they do this, when they're talking and their hands go back and forth like this, it means there's a deeper meaning to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Because I find it really useful to just use your, to like mark the things you're saying with your body language. It's, and to do it like in a conscious way is really, really useful.
You know, and that's a good point, because the thing you have to think about it, your body language or your hand motions are punctuation marks for your sentences, because you'd never write a sentence and not put a period. So even when you're talking, you can sometimes make a period with your hand, you see? So that's a good point, Miss Laura.
I love that. Well, Jane, so many, so valuable information. I'm so happy about that. Is there anything you want to add, in regarding to the body language, where you say, okay, Laura, your listeners, they need to know that?
Yeah, they need, well, I think we gave them a good broad view.
We did.
which is good, because our focus is that when people listen to us, they learn something that they can use immediately instead of just talk. Now they'll be in a meeting next week. They'll see someone rub the chin. They'll say, oh, I remember that Jan said that this is a good motion. Well, you know, on my website is just janhargrave.com. And I have my 5 books. And look, these are my books, Laura. So my first is Let Me See Your Body Talk. This is body language job interview, body language presentation skills.
Can you hold it a bit more like that? Yeah, because
okay. There body was language, gender. So this is Let Me See Your Body Talk. Okay. My second one is this. It's Judge the Jury. So this is everything we do in the courtroom, how we pick a jury, how we decide if someone's going to be lying to us. So this,
and that's really interesting, because a lot of lawyers are listening to this podcast. So for all the lawyers, that's your book.
This is on handwriting analysis is in there too. This one, my third one, is Free Way of Love. That's romantic body language gestures. Signs that men or women would do that say, ooh, she looks so good. So this is a fun, fun book. My fourth book, which is, I think, is great for your readers, and that's the one you have, or listeners, this is strictly business body language. So this is all negotiation. And the great thing about this one, Laura, it's filled with pictures of the way people sit or stand. And then underneath there, it explains what's going on. And then my last book, this is a fun one, it's called Poker Face. It's the body language of poker players. And also on my website, I have a 13-module online course, which is extremely, extremely good. That it, I go into depth and detail of lying and honesty. There's lots of tests, lots of those, and it's me teaching it. So it's a fun class, and it's really a good class. People can go there and get it. And the fun thing that I might have mentioned before I leave is that when you order my books, since I wear pink glasses, I send you a pair of pink glasses. And my pink glasses have my name on them. You see my name is on here, but they have no lenses. So then you can wear those long eyelashes like people like to wear. I don't wear those long eyelashes.
I love those glasses.
Yeah, so then they could get a, you know, I always put a pair of glasses in the book. So if you want to look like me and think like me, you can wear the glasses. And if you get a pair of glasses in a book, you send me a picture so I can keep all the people's pictures of who have glasses of mine.
Hmm.
So Laura, thank you so much.
So thank you, Jane. It was so, so interesting. I really can't get enough of it. So thank you so much for all your information. And I can only recommend my audience and my listeners to order a book and to listen to this podcast repeatedly and repeatedly, because there was so much information in it.
Yeah. And the website, I don't know if I said it really clearly, it's Jan, J-A-N-H-A-R-G-R-A-V-E, janhargrave.com. But you probably have some of my information to send out to them.
I put it in the show notes, of course.
Okay, good, good, good. Well, thank you so much. And if you want to do a follow-up, we can do one anytime, because if you get a lot of questions from here and they would like me to address those questions, we can do a meeting, just you and I, and with a list of questions is perfectly fine.
But that's a really nice idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Look, I'm going to do the honesty gesture. I had a great time with you, Laura.
Me too.
Leadership Lounge. Von und mit Laura von der Gröben. Führung, Selbstwirksamkeit und Unternehmenserfolg. Und das mit Fokus, Leichtigkeit und Energie.